Welcome, allies, to Vision Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So here we are, ongoing anarcho-entheo-astro-animism, composting the con of cult into nutrient for egalitarian community. It's our own trickster project 2025, right? So we welcome the return of Eddie Nix, because I was thinking, what do I most want to talk about? What wants to be talked about, you know, and with whom? Eddie Nix. Eddie Nix plays a bookseller in real life, a great bookstore, and has many projects operating in the dream world. He is founder and operator of Driftless Books and Music in Viroqua, Wisconsin. It's a mecca. It's worth a visit. And was a founding teacher at Youth Initiative High School and has a radio show on community radio station WDRT every Sunday in Viroqua. He identifies as a rhizome or a verb, depending on circumstances. He has been many other things. Also, yes, we're shapeshifters. We are honoring ancestral mentors, ongoing David Graeber, because his chart is smoking, Hakeem Bey, and team, that we animate and hone all of our collaborative, liberating trickster skills. Let all tyranny serve as incentive for ingenious creativity to compost cruel horror into compost for kind ingenuity, right? Welcome, Eddie.
Well, thanks, Caroline. It's beautiful to be back with you again.
And I want to do just a little prologue for our themes. It is the eve of Valentine's Day, and Pat Ewing guided me to this a long time ago, which is meant to be a celebration of equality. It's named after almost Pope Valentinius, right, who was a heretic, and we'll get back to heretics, may we all be heretics. he was in favor of complete equality. Equal priesthood, equal laity, they would rotate every week. Equal men and women, they could all serve in the clergy and then also rotate around. Original sin, what a dumb idea that is, let's get rid of that. You know, and he almost won, but the dementors of the day were like, no. They blocked that and spent the next several centuries, you know, refuting almost Pope Valentinius, going and way going extreme, going, and everyone knows women have no soul, so they went all the way. So we welcome all heretics, right? We're all heretics here. Pat Ewing taught me this too. Heretic was a term of praise in even the early Abrahamic religions, because it meant cross-pollinating, contributor to culture, so that knowledge never degraded into dogma or superstition. So welcome, heretics. Among my favorite heretics is Eddie Nix. Back to yourself. We have many things on our work table, but I did also want to honor your chart just for fun. Your Venus is 25 Aries, which is where the sun was when KPFA started. It's a person bursting with gifts more than they can hold. We love that. We love your sun in Pisces, and the sun will enter Pisces on February 18th, which is when Leonard Peltier will be released, and we all want to, as our practical backstage magic, see him safe, walk him safely home. There we go. A cloak of invisibility to any, you know, nefariousness. Right, there we go. So there we go. And I love, Eddie, your rising sign, 7 plus Leo, which is community activists spreading their ideals. And just for the fun of it, you're having a house concert in Viroqua in case anybody wants to go there quickly or telepathically participate, which I think is a great nutrient for us, right? So just invite us to your house party.
Yes, you're all invited. It's a wonderful string band from Texas called the Rock Bottom String Band, a whole bunch of heretics, equally divided between men and women. So it should be a good community table. I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, the original meaning of heresy was choice. So I think we need to ponder that about what choices we have still, what we've allowed ourselves to think, and the choices that we may not consider, how they can be woven into the web.
Yeah. Well, right, and we're going to put many, many complex things on our work table, and our aspirations as well, how we want to be, remembering that polarity feeds tyranny. So how do we spiral out of polarity? And, you know, with malice towards none, with charity for all, thank you, Abe, you know, may that be something on our work altar, an aspiration. Malice towards none, charity for all, no matter what we think of whom as we travel along. And then just for the fun of it, you'd said, you know, and all praise to our ally Jerome, who'd said, you know, you have many yodes and things in your chart, which you do at Enix. And it's like the Aries overhead and the Scorpios down below. So it's two Marses. It's the woof woof, let's get stuff going Mars, and the deep detective Mars, and then your Leo rising for all of us says nothing more wonderful than to see deeply the sketchy and everything, and to have a kind heart towards it all. That's part of our aspiration, right?
Well, I hope so. you know, we have to balance the fight with the using the forces. I think of Buckminster Fuller. One of my favorite quotes of his is, "Don't fight forces, use them." Mm. You know, and we seem to fall into the trap of fighting against. What am I against? You know, and we forget what we're for.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're in a language crafting realm. This is Moon in Virgo, the witch's moon, the writer's moon, my moon. And it's the moon of now, and it's the moon of, many people whom we might disagree with as well, but language crafting. Yeah, rather than fight, you know, again, Jornus, trickster, genius, dancing with all of us, says, we are big beings. We don't care so much what you do as the manner in which you do it, that it come from choice. Right now we're back to heresy. Many more words than fight, you know, because, you know, neurobiologists have said, you know, our brain is symbolic. When we use the word fight, it cascades kind of. And remember, it is John Michael Greer who said, if you want people to get nothing done but hot conflict, convince them they're on one side of something. He said, what two needs is three, which is the unifying story. We go, all right, this is all on our work altar. And rather than fight, I have some options. You know, when we fight, we win. Apparently not, right? How about when we dedicate, we win? When we deliberate, we win? When we outsmart, when we satirize, when we dissolve, when we bless, when we shapeshift? I just want to, you know, prime the pump for everybody, like many words. And then you can use the word fight, but on purpose, you know, on rare occasion, you know, like a cocktail. So we want all of those things. And then just to dust off what we've used for 28 years, but we dust off all of our skills, the mirror, window, door. We all have a magic mirror, which is hold up the mirror, and we're going to aspire this hour and forevermore, hold up the mirror and go, and then with our hand paw, we sweep the mirror and change it into a window. But look how beautiful it could be. And with another swoosh of the hand, we change the window into a door. Let's go, right? So we want to kind of open and close with such things, defining things and what is unique to our species and all those things too. But your spiciness. So as you know, this isn't an anarcho show, a democratic show. Go anywhere you want at any point. But just for fun, you know, you had said that you were listening to a Peter Thiel, David Graeber thing on YouTube. I'm like, really? Okay. So guide us into that realm. Well, and let me just, I can't help myself. Part of what we love, part of what I love about David Graeber is seeing him with many straight or annoying or conventional interviewers, always calm and guiding, and therefore being really well met. I just want to honor that part of him.
Yeah, what a wonderful person. you know, we lost him way too soon. And yeah, I was watching this very interesting conversation between him and Peter Thiel, who many people see as one of the Dark Lords operating now, the original PayPal mafia mafioso. But they have a wonderful dialogue between each other, talking about both technology, how it's moving, and anarchy or anarchism, which I think we have to make sure we differentiate. But Peter, I believe it was Peter, said one thing, which was so interesting. He said, if you want to talk about anarchism or be an anarchist, you have to live like you're free. You have to believe that. And I think that's another thing we kind of forget when we're in the battles of the day, that we are free and we are the architects. Architecture, planet, architecture of our society and ourselves. We're always in control of that. And whether it's a 10-step program that's telling you that, or God that's telling you that, that's the eternal lesson. So seeing these two people in dialogue, so, as you said, casually and, you know, politely with each other, was interesting, because they were making the case that, you know, things are dire, yes. History is complicated and we've been through dark times, yes. But we do have the ability to sort of craft our future.
Yes, and that that would be a Saturn theme, again, astrology really in its deepest form, a handbook, a guide to what it means to be a fully, effectively participatory Earth citizen. So Saturn is our authority, contains the word author, right? And so as we all insource what you were just suggesting, insource our authority, you know, we suck the chi out of tyranny, right? And it's also, what is it to be a participatory citizen, you know, self-responsible? We'll dive into those things too. So, yeah, well, well put. And then part of the origins of our dance now is, you know, many difficult things, personal and collective, like, whoa, and I, like many of us perhaps, you know, like, oh, overwhelming, and blah, blah. And when we are vituperatively against something, there is a self-poisoning that happens. Like, and I go, all right, let's relax into this, into all of this. You know, we're all in this dream together, right? And magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything. Not condone, but to look at things from many, many different angles and to honor our mentors. Yeah, I did not know David Graeber. I discovered him after he died because he wrote this fantastic book. It goes on forever, The Dawn of Everything, A New History of Humanity, that he wrote with David Wengrow. Spent 10 years writing it, and then he died before it was published, I think. You know, it's like, but it is dedicated, deeply dedicated, the history of egalitarian, authoritarian community, and giving to us all what we need. Remember that communities have always had the chance to shapeshift, to change, you know, in what looks like an instant to us, might have taken a long time invisibly. But I think that's part of the dynamic going, ooh. And his chart is humming. Uranus, nature's evolutionary trickster genius, you know, has stationed and is now, you know, still remains at 23 degrees of Taurus, 23, important to Robert Anton Wilson, but 23. And so almost everybody I'm doing charts with has something at 23, and it's lively, and people's charts can respond even after they're dead. So when David Graeber was born, his sun, S-U-N, is 23 degrees of Aquarius, and it's exactly opposite Uranus, trickster genius, democracy, egalitarianism, at 23 Leo, which means the full moon yesterday was right on his sun, Uranus, as well as Uranus and stirring it. So it's like, oh yes, we thank you. We need you. We need you. You know, come on in, because he's so admirable. And cultivated and pertinent to now. And I will be reading this book over and over again, and I listen to it at night while walking the dogs in the cold, going, right. So many ways we want to go. So, yeah, so there's Peter Thiel, and after that, when we were just, again, go anywhere you want, but you'd said, and then there's Bucky Fuller saying, hey, we can live the dream, or what is what Bucky said?
Well, he said a lot of things. He said, love is metaphysical gravity. Metaphysical gravity. It's amazing. But, you know, Bucky was so into integrity as a scientist, of course, but he didn't stop there. He really looked at humanity and how do we become integral? How do we maintain our integrity? And you know, we find ourselves at this place now where there's so much crisis, there's so much tension. But tension is the great integrity. You know, nothing is held together by nothing. It's held together by tension. So, you know, Bucky was able to go, let's look at how, you know, everything boils down to these simple things like the tetrahedron, and he built it up from there. And I think when we really look at it, we can, our situation now at least, remember that crisis always precipitates change. And if we're looking for change, the time to grab it is during the most crisis. So it's just a way of sort of changing our way of looking at things. I am getting a huge feedback here, so maybe you guys can call me back at the break. But
okay,
it's good for now.
You sound okay to us. It's just, I guess, coming back to you. So we will, if you can hang in till the break, or do you want to address it now? We're all casual here.
No, we can hang out till the break.
Okay, because you sound okay to me, and I hope to our heretic listeners as well. Yeah, but that's a great point. Tension, you know, everything a potential ally if we liberate it. So tension, whatever we encounter, how could this be an ally? The tension that holds things together. Yeah, you know, and the the trickster versus the con man. You know, and Lewis Hyde said, you know, trickster is lucky if enough con men show up to school her or him. It's like, oh, we're very lucky. We're very lucky. A lot of incentive for our own ingenuity. And then just to honor the always guiding sky earth story. So right now, Uranus at 23 Taurus, you know, welcoming David Graeber, humming that part of all of us. It squares the sun, right? So we're all disobedient heretics here. And then I've been, you know, enchanted by, you know, members of my election magic council to include Dark Moon Lilith, right, who is not a body but a point where the moon's orbit would balance out if the moon's orbit were circular. So Dark Moon Lilith, coming with a lot of the dark goddesses, you want it darker, we'll go positive darker, like Nemesis, I learned from Chalmers Johnson, is the goddess who brings down unjust empire and unjust fortune. We go, oh, that's great. So Dark Moon Lilith for all of us right now is at 25 Libra, whose image is for that particular degree. And again, humans made these up, so if it's useful, good, and if not, just let it go. But the image for that degree is an eagle and a dove change swiftly into each other, alternating, contrasting approaches, changing circumstances, stage magician-like changes, philosophical dilemmas. You know, war dancing that peace may arise from war. You go, okay, thank you, Dark Moon Lilith. And she trines the sun, so she's extending a hand to all of us going, want to dance with Dark Moon Lilith? And we go, yeah, we do. And then she's got this 150-degree angle back up to Uranus and Taurus. And so we have the Venusian realms, the Taurus realm of participatory animism with nature's guiding genius, and then the Dark Moon Lilith and Libra, the cultural Venus. And I love this Taurus-Libra conversation humming within us all, that we dedicate to being cultural agents on behalf of what we love and what we are in nature. So it's like, oh, God, so thank you for Darkman Lilith. Integrity, tension, love, that's good. And then we were talking about the poison and the antidote are always found next to each other in nature. So there's poison ivy and then there's jewel weed, you know. The remedy is always next to the poison. So how be you thinking about that as we see the horror of cruelty? You know, cruelty, like making life harder and scarier for all life, you know, humans, yes, but also the bees, the wolves, the everything. You know, how shall we, what is the remedy next door? Might you conjure or invite or whatever, the remedy to cruelty?
You know, I think it always comes back to compassion. And, you know, one of these things we salvage from the burning house of our former belief systems, in this, my case, Buddhism, which is, you know, everything's suffering, man. And we have to start there. It's a deep, dark chasm we're living in, whether it's good times or bad times or my team or your team on charge. You know, and from that, I think it's liberating to be able to accept it, transcend it. You know, the chaos that we live with is only as real as we make it. And when it comes to politics, as we're seeing now, there's a lot of ways to look at it. We have to remember that half of the people in the country are very excited about what's going on, whether they realize it or not. And the tricksters that are playing on the stage may be dark tricksters, and they're pulling off their own act. And it comes down to not being distracted by that act and coming back to, who are my neighbors? Who are these people that I think, are the other side? Not really. You know, how can we bring that table out and have that potluck, right? How can we substitute something for the church we might not have the opportunity to go to the pancake breakfast at, and, you know, recreate that, not just with our own little circle of same thinking friends, but invite those people that are, you know, pulled by others that bear the other into our table. I think that's one of the greatest lessons and one of the greatest joys that we can have is inviting those people that we may have been told, stay away. You start finding common ground and things transform. And I think we're at a place where if we're brave enough, we can find that common ground and work towards that transformation.
Yes, tolerance on our table. And I'd been mentioning, you know, Bo used to have a commentary on YouTube and has handed it off to Belle, his wife, you know, but back in the day, he said, every community, you know, your neighborhood, you know, he said, I find it desirable to have an affinity group. And it's people you might not even know that well, but you agree to help each other. And it's diverse. He said his, you know, in the panhandle of Florida, he said his affinity group is made up half of small C conservatives and the other half of hippie anarchists. And the model is there's a pothole in the road, you know, and you could shake your fist. When is the government going to fix this? Or you could go, who knows how to do this? Let's fix it now. So that we begin to define community and government as, you know, a distinct but collaborative in some form, you know, and the tolerance and, yeah, the Dark Lords, right, the Dark Lords. Well, turn to mythology. In Egypt, when the mythology, when The horses pulling the chariot of the sun break loose, and they're galloping with the sun towards the earth, and it's going to be a conflagration. Everything's going to be burnt up, and all the gods and goddesses go to everybody, you know, go to all the gods and goddesses. Can you help? No, no, no. Go. Finally, the only god, the only being that they haven't asked is the one they consider most evil, Set. And it's like, but it's their only chance. So they go to Set, and they go, Set, can you harness the horses of the sun to protect the earth? And he's like, sure, no problem. Let me do that. So he does. Just to put, you know, again, we're just putting experimental things on the ally. You know, sometimes the thing you think is, well, it's the Harry Potter teachings, which I'm still very fond of. You know, sometimes the person you think is your enemy may, under pressure and danger, become your ally. You know, it's like you never know. We're composting impedimental certainty that might keep us apart. So, yeah, and then saying, you know, defining things for ourselves, our own autonomy. And that's why I often reference, you know, when I was part of this committee for the Republic, you know, talk across borders, talk to right-wing conservatives and whatever. And my friend said, go talk to that man. He's the most conservative person in the room. Who said, so I did, of course. And he said, what do you know about the teachings of Edmund Burke? And I go, no, not much. He said, well, this whole conversation about small government, big government is pointless. He said, Edmund Burke said, the more we cultivate the discipline of being good citizens, the fewer rules and regulations we need. And I go, oh, well, yeah, well, that's metaphysics, that's astrology, that's Taoism. What a good idea. And he goes, Taoism, I love Taoism. Haven't been able to talk about Taoism with any of my conservative things. So I just wanted to put this on the table to be good citizens, you know. And it's part of, you know, anarchism in a way, to have a community. What I always loved about it and love about it is the thought was, if everybody is doing their work, is working their stuff, then a community, you know, will come into accord, going, yeah, well, that's what we want to do, right? Yeah, right. And that seems, you know, the self-discipline seems an important contribution to being a good player, a good community player on the team of creation. Does that hum in yourself?
Yeah, and, you know, the only time we need rules are when there's, you know, discord. When we're a community, we don't need all these laws and we don't need all these rules, right? Because we know how to act with each other. But yet the narrative says, oh, there's all these rules and all these laws and you have to be worried about them all the time. You don't. Except, I mean, how many laws of the federal government affect you? Hardly any, right? You got to pay your taxes. Okay. And that's even relative. But, you know, you're not having to worry about these myriad of laws.
Wait. I've got so much time.
Yes.
Well, I've got to bring something in, which is, you know, the exception to the ruler is, we do want Saturn regulations to protect life from corporate greed. We do want regulations to protect water, to protect the Commonwealth, to protect water. You know, and this you know, demonic jamboree of like loot everything, right? So these are worthy, ongoing in everybody conversations, right? But. You know, may all be equal, but corporations are not people, right? Right, and their incentive is to move in and hoover everything and leave a wasteland and move on, and so for that, we do need some boundaries, but also part of the Saturn realm is it says Saturn's a part of all of us that knows how to be in harmonious accord with everyone and everything, if we're in the right angle of relating. You know, and I like, you know, we go through our entire, you know, everybody we know, and I go, the best way I can love this person is never seeing them again. Oh, that feels great. Or once a year for lunch. Yeah, that's good too. And then you come into a more customized kind of realm going, yeah, where's the inner, like, okay, you know, where I can have, you know, charity to all, malice towards none. But what say you to the need for some Saturn regulations to bind avaricious corporations from destroying life.
Well, we certainly need that. And, okay.
We can put that on our table, right?
Yeah. Are we at break now? Is that...
Oh, we are. We are at break. Thank you. Thank you for being a Saturn timekeeper. All right, we're at break. KPFA will call you back. Apparently, we will dedicate to having it be a non-feedback thing. And meanwhile, we will listen to Ja Wobble. I'm an Algerian, because we want complexity of story, complexity of thinking, complexity of rhythms, complexity of spices. And Ja Wobble, I'm an Algerian, is great that way. So here we go. The Visionary Activist Show. That was Ja Wobble, and I'm an Algerian. We play it because I hope you were undulating to that wonderful complex rhythm. We want complexity of stories, complexity of thinking, complexity, diversity, complexity of everything. So we are here aspiring to composting the con of cults into nutrient for egalitarian community, ongoing anarcho-entheo-astro-animism. And there's many ways we want to go. And Eddie's back. You're back?
I'm back.
Oh, that's wonderful. Is it better?
No, but I'm just going to pretend like okay. There's a voice in my head.
Okay. That's good. You get to hear yourself twice. Well, that's a good segue into our. We want to be holding at least two voices, at least two stories at once, and let's get into some challenging material. You had said because the whole USAID and part of me goes, oh, it's a very small part of the budget. They were doing good things, and then in the back of my head, I'm like, wait a minute. I remember the critique of USAID. We want complexity, and you said, you know, Chomsky, Graeber, you know, let's give the critique of USAID so we have all stories on the table. There you go.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I heard a local coffee roaster in our town was, you know, lamenting the fact that USA or USAID, since it's not really an aid organization, was you know, responsible for helping some of their farmers in Africa that were growing the coffee that they roast. And, you know, that's true. That happened. Just like the government subsidizes farmers in this country, growing mainly GMO crops for not food, but, you know, these are intricacies. But USAID, its founding was for the CIA and the State Department to promote United States agendas, okay? And there's a horrible, huge litany of examples of this, where regime change, censorship, pushing certain parties over others. It's an ugly organization. Now,
partly,
you know, if
partly.
We can divorce the narrative that we're told of, you know, ASID good, Trump bad, and really disentangle it a little, I think it's really important to question the narratives we're being told, especially by the media and our
yes.
intimate circle of friends, who are likely on the same agenda that we are.
Right, but and then part of our detective work, you know, to be responsive, not reactive, but to delve, going, well, here's this funky, sketchy, corrupt thing, partly, you know, many stories at once. What did it want to be before it got imprisoned, you know? And how do all of us, how do we dive back down to the original liberating impulse, you know, community before cult, you know, be kind, mutual aid, right? Because this is what you're talking about, is this is mutual aid that's been hijacked into agenda. And it reminds me of the show that many of us might have watched, Mission Impossible, dun, 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 riveting. But it was extremely right wing. It was you know, a Latin American country moving to the left, go and, you know, overthrow them, right? And we were like, oh, it's exciting. Anyway, so yeah, so all the sneaky, like, where have we been bamboozled? You know, absolutely, this is a de-bamboozling time. And then, you know, with anything else you want to bring in, but that's useful, USAID, Chomsky's critique and Graeber's critique and, you know, global hegemony and, yes, all those things. However, you know, then how do we, in our kind ingenuity, you know, shapeshift or dismantle something to keep the good part going, or shapeshifting that the dedication grow the form of authenticity? You know, where the situation's so dire we can't afford the luxury of realism, right? So it's the dedication that would grow the form. And are we in accord in such a thing? So in case USAID has been doing good, you know, preventing AIDS and doing with the agenda, you know, might we agree that the sudden dismantling and food rotting on the thing, you know, it's like not graceful. Not good, not dedicated to collective well-being. Fair enough, right?
Well, there are very few revolutions that are graceful, you know. And
yeah,
I
that doesn't get us anywhere, though.
It comes down to liberating our imagination. You know, you
yeah.
said, what does this want to be beforehand? I think it was Kennedy who brought this organization into being with,
yeah.
I would believe, the most noble of purposes. And as you said, it was hijacked. And what it's become now is abhorrent to that original vision. as is many of the government organizations that the current administration is seeking to, at least in the narrative, dismantle or reorganize or de-bamboozle. You know, no one would argue that the U.S. government is corrupt with fraud and all these things. But how do we envision what these things should be? You know, even the Department of Education, this is a very new organization in the 70s, doing great work all the time. But, you know, what is needed really, and how much is really being spent on the things we need as people, as opposed to the grift and et cetera. So I think it comes back to imagination. And, you know, one of the things about anarchism, at least individual anarchism, which, you know, people like even Rudolf Steiner were self-described individualist anarchists, is about will. You know, and even Aleister Crowley said, love is the law, love under will. And if we have our own will together, then these other rules and, you know, laws aren't so important. The rules and the laws are for the people who can't handle their own will. And, you know, it comes back, you know, we can't have a fully anarchist society, obviously. We need people taking out the garbage, and we need clean water. No one's that naive. But on an individual level, as Graeber said, act like you're free. And that's the first step.
Right. And part of my love of Graeber and my infinitely diving into it and listening to it on Audible as well as reading it, you know, is so there's a couple of chapters on Mohenjo-Daro. I love saying Mohenjo-Daro and Harappa. I studied them a long, long time ago, right? In Southeast Asia, these are the first urban cultures. And there seems to be an absence of a ruling elite, a ruling class. And that's what Graeber's doing, is like, we do, you know, the dance between egalitarian, authoritarian, and always going back to this dedication, remember that democracies have occurred. He's got a whole book on pirates, which is fabulous. As an anarchist, egalitarian, you know, community, that's a whole wonderful thing. You know, and then, you know, and then you have a warrior class, a warrior priest class. And it goes with a lot of things that, you know, we people sort of like pyramids, yay. It's like, yeah, it requires a hereditary priesthood, and it requires war and sacrifice and things, you know. And Graeber gives these examples over and over again where societies have changed from warrior priest class, you know, all the wealth at the top, to like, let's not do that anymore. But Mohenjo-Daro and Harappa in the Bronze Age, you know, excavated only in the early 20th century, street plans, all kinds of things, copper tools, amulets, animals depicted, sometimes unicorns that they say are fanciful, maybe not, and saying all wealth seems to have been available, you know, to everyone. A lover of crafts are flourishing. So this is in our history, in our history DNA. It's like, yes, you know, and he goes to the Pleistocene and says evidence of great care, and Margaret Mead saying, and what tells her that there's been a civilization is, she said, when she finds the remains of someone who had a broken bone that mended, and she goes, that's a civilization, you know, of mutual aid, you know, and the things that we want now, and as you say, danger and crisis are times of experimentation. And what we kind of want to open it up is, rather than being poisoned by our own vituperative assessment, appropriate, I mean, understandable, of like, to go, how might this be an opportunity? I've been looking at Pluto and Aquarius going, all right, backstage goes, all you humans have to do is completely redesign human society and culture. Graeber will help to be in accord with nature's guiding genius in harmony. Indigenous people will help. You know, and Graeber, you know, again says democracy, democracy here. You know, coming out of the six nations, who said, well, where are your women? It's got to have women. You've got slavery. That's not going to work. You know, and just the model of in harmonious accord with the community of all flora, fauna, fungi. So the backstage gods are like, okay, humans, all you have to do is redesign human society to be in accord with nature, to be non-harmful, to be inclusive. Again, all these words that have been tended to do it. And, you know, do that before lunch, and we'll have some other projects for you afterwards. But it is, you know, collapse of empire. Here it goes, right? You know, the U.S. empire is over. You know, really. Other tyranny things are going on, but it's like, are you finding it a strategically opportune time then for imagination to go, since it's all, you know, rubble and cruelty? I mean, I just, you know, why make things more horrible for life? You know, and what do we ladle out of this cauldron? What must we die to, lest we die from? So are you up for this as the opportunity to throw things into the cauldron and ladle out the desirable in accord with nature, in accord with our guiding mentors, in accord with what humans have done on occasion?
Yeah, I think the imagination is critical. And we have to start from, you know, like Bucky Fuller once again said, we have the opportunity to live better than anyone has ever lived before, all of us. You know, Malthus is a lie. And if we mm-hmm. start from that premise, instead of a premise of scarcity, of always thinking there's not enough, who gets what, I think we have that starting point to reimagine. And it's always about local. You know, I mean, it's a catchphrase, think global, act local, but it's so true. You know, what we do in our communities is what's real to us. Yeah, I'm in a very unique position where I'm in a small town with great people, forward thinkers, both farmers and artists. And we have a rich history of egalitarianism. I mean, I think of the effigy mound culture,
yeah,
which was very prominent around here. They're very egalitarian culture. They made these mounds in the forms of lizards and bears and an elaborate meaningful mounds. And people say, well, what were they for? Well, that's not the question. The question is, like, why did they do it? They did it because it was their art and it was their life. And then you have this hierarchical culture coming up from the South that, you know, came up to force with them. And what did they do? Not fight. They disappeared, you know, and that comes back to, like, Peter Wilson, Hakeem Bey, the art of disappearance. You know, when is that important? Disengaging as opposed to going back to the street. Going back to the street is important, but sometimes it's more important to do the work locally. So I think, you know, that's what I think is going to give us the inspiration to get through dark times, is to work locally with people. Because if we don't have that, we really don't have anything.
No,
the narratives
great.
Are just too powerful from the outside.
Right, and then I just want to repeat what Graeber and Wengrow were honoring in everywhere, but Mohenjo-Daro and Harappa, saying, there's no kshatri, there's no warrior class, there's no sacrifices, there's no touting of war, there's no aristocratic burials, there's no evidence of charismatic priest kings, right? So all the things that we have now, you know. We go, right, we know that cultures have decided, well, we don't know about if Mohenjo-Daro and Harappa started cool, right? You know, but we know that some cultures like Teotihuacan were Mayan in their model. Yes, exquisite culture, but hereditary priesthood. Wouldn't really have wanted to live there. We admire it. We admire it. But, you know, take your heart sacrifice. I'm headed for the jungle. We'd be heretics there too, right? You know, and then to just be clear, you know, when I was in India last time, you know, a savvy member of my whatever it was, workshop, team, school, said, you know, all the mythologies, they're all war, aren't they? And I go, right, yeah, we want to change our minds. There's nothing more wonderful than the change of mind. I used to think this, and now I think that. So many of us grew up, you know, like you're maybe overcorrecting about Buddhism. Yes, it can be a cult, but you know, the Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita, yes, wonderful, wonderful things, you know. But they are war-justifying mythologies, you know. And in fact, the Bhagavad Gita was sort of invented to justify India's colonial war on Sri Lanka, right? And it's like, yeah. So even our mythic entertainment has had a war priesthood, you know, agenda. But then I also just want to bring up, a friend of mine said that his long love of Hinduism and the liberating parts of it, may we all love the liberating parts of what we're dedicated to and bring it alive. And he said, you know, in Hinduism, there's a god, Rudra. His primary dedication was Rudra. And Rudra was a heretic. Rudra was, you know, in favor of complete equality. What is this caste system? Complete equality, egalitarian, you know, share the wealth, all those kinds of things. And Shiva was hired, is the way some put it, to quiet him down. Shiva's name means to quiet, right? And it's like, oh, we thought Shiva was a cool, sexy, autonomous guy. No, he was apparently employed by the colonialists to quiet down equality. And so we all want to kind of reach way down in our own heritage and mythology, going, where's the liberating thing that might have gotten exiled? You know, Neptune in Pisces in its last moments of Pisces, well, it's going to to and fro for a while. But it's, you know, what have we forgotten that we must remember, and what has been imprisoned or exiled or undervalued but is of great value, especially the mythologies of transformation and equality. You know, let's be creatively suspicious in all realms, going, where's the liberating thing? You know, and where, you know, a whole category I have is prison masquerading as freedom, right? So it's like, so even in your having had a run-in with a Buddhist cult that caused you to go, you know, we still go, Buddha, pretty good guy. You know, by what is the world polluted, Shariputra? He was asked in 500 BC. By greed, he said. You know, anytime somebody takes more than they need. Yeah.
The only problem with Christianity is the Christians, or yes. You know, these are quotes that, but that there's the Buddhist wisdom will always be wisdom. You might have a cult, and that distorts it. But you know, we're still free to leave that cult and see the con. Yes. We have to be able to always differentiate and be our own individual free person.
Absolutely. Trust plants, not gurus. And Alan Watts said in Myth and Ritual and Christianity, said the problem with Western humans and Christianity is they sucked the finger instead of going where it pointed. We go, right on, Alan. And that also just another honoring of Alan, you know, who said, no sense clinging to the rocks that are falling with you, right? So perhaps one of the things on all of our heretical work tables is to critique, and then to conjure the desirable, all-inclusive, inviting the best and the ingenious and the least obedient part of everybody, you know, over here. You know, here's a story. As the old thing goes down, you know, here we're imagining little rope bridges across the chasm of welcoming. Come on over. Which is why we do want to kind of compost the schadenfreude of people going, oh, people voted for Trump and now they're sorry. And it's like, yeah, but don't spend more than 2 seconds on that. And I just want to put out, you know, that even in social media, or not even, but social media and blue sky, pretty good, but it's still extremely childish. In its infantile reactivity, going, "Eh, who hates Trump more than I do?" And it's like, these are not the skills quite yet. We want the skills of spiraling ingenuity, critique, then vision and blessing. Critique without vision is complicitous with dominance, I have often said, but I'm willing to not say it anymore. I mean, are we all willing to change our minds? So let me just toss it back to you in our last 2 minutes here. Anything, any way you want to respond to those things.
Well, I think we have to be able to choose our own algorithm, like choose your own adventure. Peter Wilson once coined a term called technopathocracy, rule by sick machines. And I think the algorithm is the sick machine. Blue sky may be banal to you, but X is also banal with, endless rando people punching each other. Like, who wants to see that? But it's forced on you. So I think we have to be able to disengage when it becomes too much, whether it's social media or just the political banter that we engage in. And we have to be able to celebrate, back to the community table and the house concert. If everybody in the country did house concerts, think what kind of world that would be.
That's a great
idea. It's
not
going to like shut down the music venues. It's just going to give the bands a heck of a lot more opportunity to tour. And everybody has that opportunity, no matter who you are. So realizing that we're under this regime of sick machines is the first step, just like realizing that we do have the resources to make things better. Scarcity consciousness is a lie.
And we're on our way out. We're on our way out. Eddie Nix, always a delight. We will keep conversing. Conversing means turning together. We're all in this giant conversation. Yay team, we're all working on these things. So thanks so much, Eddie Nix, and thanks always to Kirsten Thomas, great board up. And I'm Caroline Casey, and Visionary Activist Show on Patreon. You can find us or coyotenetworknews.com for anything you want to know. And we will reconvene next week. Thanks, team. Thank you, Eddie.